Okay, good morning. Any question from last lecture? Short question. Oh, okay. Today, I continue to discuss the formalism of functional integral quantization and those generating function formalism. But I'll come closer to what you have studied already in QFT1 and quantum theory, and what we aim at, which is studying real physical quantities through the physical observables, through perturbation theory, mainly. So, next time, next lecture on Monday, I will go back to the free theory, the free field theory, and discuss in more detail the causal structure of the propagator, Feynman propagator, its ultraviolet short, large energy, and infrared low energy properties. And I'll start to discuss a bit why renormalization is needed in quantum field theory, without any actual calculation, but why it is needed. So today, functional integral methods continued. So first, again, remember that we mainly discussed a theory involving a single scalar field. So it corresponds to quantizing bosons with no charge, the simplest one, like the Higgs boson, in fact. But and so the Euclidean action, well, the action has a general form, this plus V of phi, some potential, which contains both the quadratic term, which gives the mass of the bosons, and the interaction term, nonlinear term. This is for the Euclidean matrix. So we have a signature plus, 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 if we are in four dimension. So this is Euclidean matrix, and in Minkowski matrix, I choose the choice of signature for spacetime, minus plus plus plus, which is the East Coast metric. I don't remember, maybe I mixed East and West, but that's East Coast. Well, it's just a denomination. And in this case, the action is, as you know, the usual one, so it's integral d dx. Contains both t and x, one half of dt phi squared minus one half of dx phi squared minus p phi. And we have the corresponding functional integral, which allows to compute physical quantities, which is in fact the things we consider was the generating functional for the correlation function, which in the Euclidean case was z of j equal integral, functional integral of phi of exponential minus 1 over h bar, the Euclidean action for phi minus g times phi. Okay. So this is the Euclidean generating functional. For Minkowski, you had high factor. Let's write them for completeness here. This is integral d phi exponential I over h bar s of phi plus g phi. Okay, that's form if you just make a weak rotation of the field. Of course, J is a classical source term, so it's just some kind of external variable you introduce in order by taking derivative to construct the physical object. So changing the sign of J is just change the formula. Okay, so this is a functional generating for correlation functions. And I defined and try to argue that I define this generating function, which is just h bar times the logarithm of z of e of g, and you have the same corresponding quantities for the Minkowski real-time quantity, which is the generating function for the connected correlation or Green functions. While this is the function for the physical correlation function, taking into account all the Feynman diagrams. Okay, so now you know that in classical mechanics correspond to take in those formalisms the limit when h bar is zero. So that we neglect, suppose they are unimportant, all the quantum effects, like in particular entanglement. So classical physics is obtained as a classical limit of quantum physics when in your equation you let h bar goes to zero. And in that case, there is something which is, of course, you know that the classical equation of motion, which gives you the solution, the physical configuration of the field, contains the dynamics, it contains everything, are obtained by a variational principle. Action, the Lagrange Maupertuis principle, which is basically that if you have the action of phi and you make a function of a small variation of the field phi, so you change phi of x into phi of x plus a small variation of the field, this is equal to zero. The solution of those equation gives you the phi of x, which are the solution of the equation of motion. Okay. So you have the action and you have the equation of motion. Those are the two important. In a quantum theory, phi becomes either operator, but in the functional integral formalism, it's just a dummy variable you integrate out. You get the expectation value of the operator by applying this j. J is still classical. So J is classical. It's classical. Phi is quantum. So when you integrate, you just have functional of J. Okay, so in the quantum world, is there an analog of the equation of motion? And is there an analog of the action? Because the action is just now a function and you integrate over. You have ZW. So today I will discuss this and, depending on the time, shortly or in more detail, what is the quantum analog of the action, which is called the quantum action or the effective action. Okay, so first the equation of motion. The equation of motion of classical theory are replaced by a set of equations, but relating the physical observable, the correlation function, and which are called the Schwinger Dyson, or in short, DS equations. Okay, they are the analog of this, but dealing with quantum objects. So Schwinger is just the famous Julian Schwinger, one of the creators of quantum electrodynamics, who got the Nobel Prize with Tomanaga and Feynman. Dyson is Freeman Dyson, another famous physicist who made very important contribution both in quantum electrodynamics. He was very young at that time, and many others. For instance, he's the inventor of the concept of Dyson spheres, you know, this big artificial sphere which might encircle stars, but that's one hobby. Well, also, the concept goes back to Olaf Stapledon, but that's not important. Okay, anyway, so this is a bit of history. And what are those equations? So the question is, can we derive, well, let me, so this was my first, oops, this was my first. In fact, I should keep the habit of numbering the blackboard so that I don't get lost. So the question is, what is the analog of doing a small variation on a classical field configuration in the quantum theory? And you'll see that, in fact, although this is a simple idea, you can get very interesting result. Okay, so let me consider this functional integral, which defines the generating function for the correlation function. I'll consider the Euclidean theory, but you can do exactly the same thing for the real-time theory in Minkowski space. Just some I factor appears, but not that many, in fact, in that case. So in this formula, you see, phi is a dummy variable you integrate over. But you may ask, what happens if I make a change of variable in the functional integral? So what happens is I start from phi in the functional integral, and I make a change of variables where phi of x is changed in phi of x plus some delta phi of x, where this is a classical field, a classical variation. We integrate over phi in the functional integral, but we kept this delta phi fixed. Okay. Well, you just have to consider what is the variation of the action. So if I change this into this, let me call it phi prime of x, I made a change of variable. So I can rewrite, of course, z of j. I omit the Euclidean factor as a functional integral over d of phi prime exponential minus 1 over h bar s of phi prime minus j phi prime. Okay? I've not changed anything. But now, the action changes. It's just given by the same formula that in classical theory, neglecting short distance effect. So S of phi prime is equal to S of phi plus a term which I'm going to write in a short way, in a very short way, as delta phi times the functional derivative of phi with respect to phi of x plus higher order term in delta phi. See? And this is a shorthand notation for integral over d dx, integral over spacetime, of delta phi of x times the functional derivative of the action, which is a function of the phi when I vary phi at a point x, exactly in the same way that this j phi was shortened notation for integral over x. So g of x, phi of x, the same notation. Okay, so this is the variation of the action. And what is the variation of g phi? Well, that's even simpler. G phi prime is just g phi plus j delta phi. Now this is classical. This is quantum. This is classical. This is classical.
Professor?
Yes?
Can you explain what you mean by classical variation? And is there another way to vary the field? Or?
No. I just mean that for a given field configuration, I vary my variable like that. But now in the functional integral, I make this variation for all phi. So delta phi of x is chosen before performing the integration over phi.
So
in the functional integral.
Your phi is not yet an operator, right?
No, phi here is just the random variable I'm integrating over but once you make the functional integral, you get an object which contains the expectation value of operator in the vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is a variation for the action. This is variation one, let's say, for the action. This is a variation two for this term. And there is another term here, which is a measure, which we should not forget it. So the question is, what is the variation of the functional measure? In order to be really rigorous, you must see how you have discretized, etc. But roughly speaking, d phi of x, the measure, is just, that's a bit formal, the product of all points in space-time of the ordinary measure of a real number of phi over of x. Okay. And here, for every x, I just make a linear shift, which doesn't change the measure. This is a measure, standard measure, the Lebesgue measure
for mathematician
on the real number, which is translational invariant. Therefore, this is the same thing as d phi of x. Therefore, this is the functional integration measure over phi. So the measure is unchanged by this transformation. It's just a consequence of the fact that the measure, the standard Lebesgue measure of a real number, is invariant by translation. Okay. So, of course, now the final result is independent of delta phi of x. We have just made a change of variable inside an integral. So, of course, the variation of z of g, j, is zero when I make this change of variable inside the integral. Therefore, what is this variation? This variation is just, there is no variation for the measure, so it's a variation of the exponential, which is the variation of the exponential of the first term, plus the variation of the exponential of the second term. So this variation, in fact, it is a functional integral. Integral over d phi, exponential minus 1 over, well, maybe this is going to be a bit short. So what is this variation? This delta z of g, j, is integral over phi exponential of minus 1 over h bar s of phi minus j times phi. And then you have the variation of this term. So this contains two terms, where there is a factor 1 over h bar. But so formally it is so minus 1 over h bar. But that's not very important. What you can times first, so this is, oh, there is a delta phi of x, so we can rewrite this. Let's be a bit more careful. The variation is an integral over x. Well, there is this, okay, minus 1 over h bar, which is unimportant. Then I have an integral over x, delta phi of x. Remember, this is a classical field, so we can get it out of the integral, times integral d phi exponential minus 1 h bar s of phi minus j times phi. And then I have the variation, the term of the variation will depend on phi. So I have delta s of phi over delta phi of x minus j of x. You see? And this is zero. So this corresponds to the unnormalized expectation value of an operator. You see, so basically, and this is true for any, for all delta phi. This is zero for all infinitesimal delta phi of x. Therefore, this is zero for all x. You have some local observable. At point x, it depends on j, because we have not yet set j to zero. So basically, this means that there is some equation relating the variation of the action. That's the term which appears in classical physics, to the source term. And we can write it in a bit in a sketchy way as the expectation value of delta s of phi divided by delta phi of x minus j of x is zero. But for the quantum theory where j is not yet fixed. So instead, so that's an expectation value, that's a vacuum expectation value for a quantum field theory with action s phi minus j phi. It's only when you set j equal to zero that you recover the vacuum expectation value in the theory with a physical vacuum. So in other words, that's a vacuum expectation for a quantum field theory with an action s of phi minus j phi. I should raise this a bit. Therefore, which has a vacuum state, if you think in terms of the Minkowski theory, you realize that difference between Minkowski and is that there is a change of sign. Now, this is a vacuum which depends on J. So the vacuum is a functional of J.
Professor?
Yes?
Since you took the integral of ddx out,
yes,
should that not be a functional derivative of a Lagrangian, not the action?
No.
The action.
I come back. The action depends on, the action is the integral over the Lagrangian density.
Yeah.
But the Lagrangian density depends on the field and its derivative.
Yeah.
Therefore, these terms which involve derivative of the field. But I'm going to write it just now. So this is a nice, somewhat, somehow simple calculation, but it's general for any theory with any action. I've not used the form of the action. So no, let's go back to our scalar field, where the action is the sum over the derivative terms plus the potential. What is delta S? Delta of the action of phi over delta phi of x for this action, for this theory. Well, we do, it's a classical calculation, so we just use the results we did for deriving, for instance, the Klein-Gordon equation, the classical Klein-Gordon equation for the scalar, classical scalar free field. So this is minus the Laplace operator with respect to x of phi of x. So this is a local operator of phi, but involving two derivatives of x. Remember that delta x is the Laplace operator. So this is the functional derivative of the terms 1 half of d phi squared. And the functional derivative of v of phi, it's a term which is just some function of phi at x. So this is just the derivative of the potential taken at phi of x. You see? Okay, so this equation can read, therefore, the Schwinger diagram. So these are the Schwinger. These are the Schwinger-Dyson equations in the most general form. Okay. So the Schwinger-Dyson equation for this scalar field theory, it's Schwinger-Dyson. This is us just at every point x minus delta x of the expectation value of phi, well, minus delta x of the expectation value of phi at point x, minus j of x, the classical source term, plus v prime phi of x in the theory defined for j different from zero. So this is, what you see? So, I'm sorry. This is delta x of phi of x. The delta x acts only on the expectation value for the theory is in a vacuum, which is defined by the theory with the source terms. And then you get plus plus g prime for x in the theory defined with j, plus j of x equals zero. Okay. So this is the relation This gives a relation given by some differential equation between expectation value of various operator in the theory. So this is an equation between vacuum expectation value of operators. So it's a quantum equation. It's valid for the quantum theory. Yes?
Why has the expectation value around the J vanished? That was an expectation value around J.
Yeah, but the expectation value of J of X for a theory, since J is a classical source sum, you don't need to have J of X. You see. Now, in fact, this equation, since it's a function of J, when you take functional derivative of J, you get expectation relation between expectation value of products of operator. Let me give an example. Let's take this equation and take its functional derivative with respect to J at some points x1. Well, let's call this point x0. Of this Schwinger-Dyson, the Schwinger-Dyson equation, let me call this the Schwinger-Dyson equation, at point x0, and takes j equals 0 after making the derivative. Well, taking a derivative with respect to j of this makes another J. So if I take a derivative with respect to 1, I get minus delta x0 of the expectation value of phi of x0 phi of x1. This gives me plus V prime of phi of x0 expectation value of this times phi of x1. But we should not forget the last term, which has in fact a minus sign. The functional derivative with respect to j of x1 of j of x0. That's a new term. That's the term which comes from the quantum. And the functional derivative of a classical function with respect to itself at two different points is just the Dirac delta function. So I get, in other words, you get minus delta d of x1 minus x0 equals 0. This is the Dirac distribution. Okay, so that's for one point. And this is just comes from the fact that delta j of x0 with respect to j of x1 is delta of x0 minus x1. That's the fundamental rules of functional derivatives. And it's just the analog of for function of d of x I over dx g for a function with several derivatives is just delta of ig, whereas this is the Kronecker delta function. It's 1 if I equal j and 0 if I is different from g. So it's just the functional derivative version of the rule of partial derivative with respect to different variables. Okay, so this is new. This is a classical term, and this is a quantum term. Quantum, classical, classical contribution. Okay, and of course, imagine that you were in the limit where h bar goes to zero. then there is a, you tend toward the classical solution of the equation. And then this expectation value becomes just the value of the classical solution. So you get minus delta x0 of phi of x0 phi of x1 for a classical solution, plus v prime of phi of x0 times phi of x1 equals 0 for all x1. So you get the classical equation of motion. But here there is a quantum term. Okay, and we'll see it's important. Of course, you can do that for more than one derivative. And then you are going, if you write delta over delta j of x1 up to delta over delta g of xn of this, you are going need to have a relation minus delta x0 of phi of x0 phi of x1 up to phi of xn plus v prime of phi of x0 phi of x1 phi of xn. But then you have a delta function for each contribution when x1, x2, xn equal to 0, x0. So you get a minus sum from I equal 1 to n of delta d of x1, xi, I'm sorry, minus xn equals 0. Okay, so this is the general form of the Schwinger-Dyson equation. For correlation functions. Okay. So this is, was my third blackboard. And now we are going to see immediately what are the nice consequences of those equations. First, let's consider the free theory. So v prime of phi, v of phi is m squared over 2 phi squared. So v prime of phi of x is just m squared phi of x. So let's consider this equation, this one. For n equal 1. Here you get also phi of x. So we get an equation for n equal 1. When you apply one derivative with respect to j of the generating function, you get that minus delta with respect to x0 plus m squared of the expectation value of phi of x0 phi of x1. This is this term plus this terms equal, I get minus delta x1, put it on the right hand side, equal delta of x0 minus x1. I've not done any functional integration. I just use the fact that the functional integral is invariant under change of variable of the phi. That's for the free theory. So let's call this 0 for the free theory because v equals 0, the coupling constant is 0. Well, this is the equation for the propagator in Euclidean space. This is the equation which defines the free propagator in Euclidean space. But of course, you are going to have the same equation just with some I factor and the D'Alembertian operator instead of the Laplacian operator if you are in Minkowski space. So this is the free propagator. You get it just without doing any Gaussian integration. Of course, it's equivalent. So you get that this propagator, phi of x0, phi of x1 is, well, if you go into Fourier space, dk over 2 pi d ei kx times k squared plus m squared. That we have seen in the previous lecture. So you get the free propagator from the Dyson equation. Now, more interestingly, what does this give for n equals 3? For n equals 3, we get an equation for a correlation function involving 1, 2, 3, 4 fields. So we'll get an equation for the 4-field correlation function. And this equation is minus delta with respect to the coordinate of the first plus n squared of phi of x0, phi of x1, phi of x2, phi of x3 for the free theory. But now we have three delta functions. So we get delta of x0 minus x1 plus delta of x0 minus x2 plus delta of x0 minus x3. This is important point. This is any. I made a very important mistake. When you take the derivative with respect to j, you still have the by this trick. Well, here it's correct. But if you have several points, when you take the derivative with respect to 1j, you get one delta function, but the other fields in the correlation function are still there, because you don't, the delta over delta g of phi, I'm sorry, damn, you should have. So what you get is the expectation value where you have phi of x1, phi of xn. That's important, that's the important point. So, and simply, the field at point xi, if you apply a derivative with respect to j at point xi, is removed. It's not there anymore. So where is my, I need a red chalk. So you remove one field. Because the derivative with respect to g of x I doesn't act to create a phi of x1, but it acts on j here. Therefore, it creates a delta function instead of a field. Okay, and so that's the real. I'm sorry, forget the first equation. This is a very important term. Yes?
There's also an h-bar multiplying the delta.
Pardon?
There's also an h-bar multiplying the
delta. In this equation.
Multiplying the delta. So you get a 1.
Yes, there is an h-bar. That's why I say that it is a, yes. Since there is a, in the action, there is a minus 1 over j, there is an h-bar here. No, an h-bar here, and yes, and there is also an h-bar here. That's why I called it quantum effect. Yes, sorry, I should read my notes where it's contained. Okay, so there is an h-bar here. Therefore, there is an h-bar here. Yes. Okay, so let's go back. So here I'm getting an h bar, delta of x0 minus x1, and then I have phi of x2, phi of x3, because you still have the delta over delta j of x2 and delta over delta j of x3, which acts on the source term in the functional integral. So they create some phi operator.
Professor.
Yes?
Should there be a x0, xi minus x0 there, or xn?
Yes. Yes, I start to be tired. That's x0 minus xi. Yes. Yes, because this is the action of delta over delta phi of xi somewhere here on the j and not on the. Okay. So here I have removed phi of x1. But then, of course, I have plus delta of x0 minus x3. Phi of x1, phi of x3, plus delta of x0 minus x3, phi of x2, x1, phi of x2. Okay. So it's a free theory, so this, you see, so this is just two-point function. So you get an identity between the four-point function and two-point function. But now, you can do the same trick. Solve this equation, which means that you invert the operator, minus Laplacian plus m squared, and let it act on the delta. So you get the Feynman propagator. You get the propagator. So what you get is that this operator, this correlation function, is equal to inverse of this operator acting on that is just a two-point function phi of x0. Phi of x1, and you get phi of x2, phi of x3. Inverse of this acting on this gives you phi of x0, phi of x3, two-point function times the two-point function, phi of phi of x1, phi of x4. And the final term is phi of x0, phi of x, I'm sorry, that's 2 here. No, that's 3, that's x2, and that's x1, that's x3, no, that's x2, times phi of x1, phi of x3. So you get that the four-point function is a sum of products of two-point functions. We get that the four-point function in the free theory, 1, 2, 3, 4, is just one, two, three, four. So you get Wick's theorem. From the Dyson-Schwinger equations. Again, without Gaussian integral. Yes?
Sorry, I think I missed it. So does the h-bar disappear when you rotate the turn?
Pardon?
Does the h-bar disappear when you turn the...
Well, the h-bar has been put in the definition of the correlation function, because the h-bar is in the delta function.
Okay.
Yeah. A good exercise is to check what I'm written, but I realized that I always made some typo. And this was not a typo, this was an important mistake. I went just too fast. Okay. So let's make a break, 5 minute breaks. And now I'm going to show you how, for the phi 4 interacting theory, how you start to construct the Feynman diagrams by solving the Schwinger-Dyson equation. It's, of course, equivalent to apply the Wick theorem, but you get it in an iterative way. So, see you in 5 minutes. And I try to rest, make no mistake. Yes, let me drink it. Yes, of course.
Okay, so first of all, I don't understand why we need the verb here.
Why?
Why we need the verb here?
The
vacuum expectation value.
No, that's because, well, they are there.
I mean, in board number two.
In?
Board number two.
In number two. That's because we are making a functional integration of a phi. So the end result is by definition in the functional integral formalism an expectation value of products of operators of fields. So it comes out from the calculation. We don't need them. They come out.
Another thing that I can see is why the functional derivative of phi and z here
gives us
another copy of phi.
That's, remember, go back to the calculation I detailed in the last lecture. Maybe I went a bit fast. So this was 4. Let's go to 5. Let's do this calculation explicitly. Yeah, I was a bit short. So I know that integral over d phi exponential of minus 1 over h bar s of phi minus j phi times the variation of the action
h bar inverse operator
minus delta x 0 phi of x 0 plus v prime of phi of x 0. I know that this is 0. Now let me take a functional derivative. And there is a j. I'm sorry. And there is minus j of x 0 equals 0. So this is a standard functional integral with a source term, and this is the term she comes out from computing the effect of changing the change variable. So now let me take the function with respect to x 1 of this object. So yeah. So if delta g of x 1 acts on this one, it creates phi of x 1, and if it acts on this term, it creates a 1 over h bar, let's say. And here it creates a delta of x1 minus x0. Okay? So if I multiply this by h bar, if you prefer, here it puts a phi of x, and here it creates an h bar. That's the one I missed. And if you do it once, but if you do it twice, then you get a phi of x1, a phi of x2, and then delta of x1 minus x0 plus a delta of x2 minus x0, etc.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Okay. Well, in the note that I put in, this calculation is already presented in the notes of last year, but I updated the note now on the website, so you can see the chapter on Swinger-Dyson equation is slightly enlarged, well, by just a few equations. Okay. So you see, the Swinger-Dyson equation gives you relation between correlation function of operator with different number of operators. And they are the analog of the classical equation of motion, because we have a term which is a classical equation of motion, and then you have this additional term, h bar sum of delta, which, by the way, are called contact term. Which are a quantum origin because there is an h bar. And they are called contact term because they appear when the point at which you compute the Schwinger-Dyson equation only when they coincide with one of the points of the operator. So if x0 is different from x1, xn, then of course these terms are absent. You just get a quantum version of the classical equation of motion, where you take that the variation of the action is an operator, and you insert it. But the contact term here, and they are important, because they give you the quantum effects. OK. So now, and maybe I need a whole blackboard. So let me start with blackboard 5. Let's go to a theory with interactions. And I'll take the standard, similar, important example, which is the 5-4 theory. 5-4 theory, where V of phi, you get the standard quadratic term, plus a term in phi-4, with a coupling constant, and by convenience, I normalize the coupling constant by dividing by 24. G is a coupling constant. Okay, so then, of course, the only difference is that now V prime of phi, the derivative of the potential, is m squared phi, that's the term, plus g divided by 6 factorial 3 times phi cube. So now my Schwinger-Dyson equation here is minus delta x0 plus m squared apply to the correlation function, the expectation value of the products of phi of xn. Now that's for the interacting theory. So here I have n plus 1 points, x0, x1, xn. But now I have a new term which comes from the interaction, which is g over 6 times phi of x0 cube, phi of x1, phi of xn. And the term with the delta function is unchanged. So this is equal h bar sum from I equal 1 to n of delta d of x0 minus xi phi of x0. No, I'm sorry, there is no phi of x0. So it's phi of x1, phi of xn, where the phi of xi has been removed. So you get an equation which, as for the free field, relates the n plus 1 point function to n minus 1 point function, But here, instead of having one phi of x naught, I have 3 points of x1. So this is a n plus 3 point function. And it's an n plus 3 point function because the interaction is phi to the 4. If I had taken an interaction phi cube, for instance, this would be an n plus 2 point function. You see. So this is an equation which relates more correlation function. But you see the effect of the coupling constant. And therefore, let's first apply it to the 2 point function. Or maybe let's first apply it to the 4 point function. Yes. So, n equals 4, n equals 3. Then I get that let's first apply it to n equal 1, yes. Let's first apply it to the 2 point function. I get that minus delta phi of x0 plus m squared I need my notes, otherwise my notes are clear. And let me denote that this is a n plus this is a correlation function with a point 0 and some point 1 to n. So this is a schematic description for all the Feynman diagrams. Okay, so this is a generic n-point function for the interacting theory. This is an n plus 3-point function. So it's a function which we can draw like this. We have 1, 2, 3, to n, which represents the phi 1, phi n. But here we have 3 points phi. So this is, in fact, you are considering an n plus 1, and here an n plus 3 point function. But the three fields are at the same point. So they correspond in Feynman diagrammatics to correlate to propagators which end up at the same point. Okay, and this is now an n minus point function. So this is a function where 1 to n and you remove some I line. And x naught, there is no phi x naught. So there is a delta function which acts on it. So if you now apply this to this, what you get is that you get a propagator for this. So you get the schematic representation that if I'm considering an n plus 1 point function with x0, x1, xn, this is equal to plus g, right, plus g over 6, there is a g over 6, of course, times. Now I invert, I get the inverse of this operator acting on the x naught of the function x naught. So it means that I'm adding a propagator. I know Vic theorem already for the free theory. So I have x0 here. But here I have some vertex. And I have n point function. So I have again n plus 3 point function, but I have here a propagator acting on here. So here I have a vertex, 4 point vertex. You see the 4 point vertex of perturbation theory is generated by the Schwinger-Dyson equation. And this is equal to then I get the inverse operator acting on the delta function. So I get sum from I equal 1 to n of a propagator, the standard free propagator of the free theory between the point 0 and the point I, times the correlation function with n minus 1 point, where the line of the has been removed because the I is not attached to zero. Okay, so this is a and of course I can move this here. Let me state that this is equal to minus g. So this is a diagrammatic form of the Schwinger-Dyson equation for any 4 point function. It relates the n plus 1 point function here to an n plus 3 point function where you had a vertex of the 5-4 theory. So the vertex of the 5-4 theory comes from the Schwinger-Dyson equation, and to adding a propagator separated, so it's a disconnected diagram, disconnected part from this. Okay, so now what does this give, for instance, when may I erase this, or do you want me to keep it? Okay, I erase it. And it's an exact equation. You see, it contains, this is an infinite sum of Feynman diagrams. This is an infinite sum. It's an exact equation. It's not a perturbative equation. It's true for the full theory. Exact. Okay. So let's apply it to n equal one. No, n equals 3. Let's apply it to n equals 3. What is the most convenient things? Well, maybe we can apply it for n equal 1. Or to n, okay, n equals 3, it means that the 4 point function 0, 1, 2, 3 is equal to minus g times this plus, there is a factor 6, plus sum from 1 to 3 of 0 I two-point function. So it's so this relation relates the four-point function to a four-point function with one vertex, and to a two-point function times a propagator. So we know that when g equals zero, let me see what it gives for n equal 1. For n equal 1, it tells you that the two-point function 0, 1 is equal to minus g over fix times this equation, where this is a four-point function, plus then there is only one I, so we get 0, 1, times nothing. Okay. So now assume that expanding G, this is an exact equation. Expanding G. Well, nothing means that the contribution of one is one. The contribution of the no diagram is one. So expanding G and keep only the term of degree zero and one in the coupling constant. Here this is a four-point function, but we know what is the four-point function is for the free theory. It contains three terms which are obtained. So this is for g equals zero, this object is just this object plus this object, if you want, plus, no, this is this object plus this object plus this object. We are dealing with not necessarily connected. So it's just you have three products of operator of in the diagram. Okay. And now we attach these lines. This is to a vertex. So we get that full two-point function is equal to minus g, and we have three terms with a factor 6 here. So we have only contribution of this form, you see, because they are attached to a vertex. So we have three vertex, we have a factor 6, so we have a g over 1 half times the sum of the contribution where you have 0, 1, and here we have the vertex connected by the other diagrams here. This one, when it's connected to the same point, it gives this, it gives this, etc. Plus these terms, which is the free field, the free propagator. And then we have a higher order term over the g squared. So you see that solving the Schwinger-Dyson equation for the two-point functions, we get the first term of the perturbative expansion. So we get the Feynman diagrammatics by just applying the Schwinger-Dyson equation in a recursive way. Okay, so now let's do that for this. And again, expand in G. Okay, this is a term about the G. We know what this is at order zero in G. It's given by Vick's theorem. So this, I have zero, one, two, three, is equal first to the contribution of those terms . So this is a two-point function, but we have computed the two-point function, the full two-point function, at first order in G. So first, zero order, you get just the contribution of Vick's theorem. 0, 1, 2, 3, plus 0, 2, 1, 3, plus 0, 3, 1, 2. That's by applying the results we got, this contribution of these terms. Then we get this contribution, which is there, because here I'm keeping in those diagrams, two-point diagrams, the contribution of order 0 and of order g. So I get plus, but with a factor minus g over 2, the corresponding diagram 0, 1, 2, 3, plus. And you can check that you have 0, 1, 2, 3 diagrams, and plus the three other contribution. Okay, and then we have this contribution for n equals 3, but we have to take here a 6-point diagram computed at order 0. So it's just given by a sum of propagators. No, we know that at order 0, a 6-point function, it's just a sum of contribution of diagrams like that. It's just Vick's theorem, which is also derived by Schwinger-Dyson equation at order 0 in G. And therefore, in fact, it means that these other diagrams, we just attached this to this, this to this, and this to this. And if you count the number of contraction, etc., etc., you end up that the contribution of this term is just minus g times 0, 1, 2, 3. Sum over contraction. Sum over. You do a bit of combinatorics, they all give the same diagram, which is this. So, this is a four-point function at order 0 in the coupling constant, Vick's theorem. This is the contribution to the four-point function at first order in G. And then, of course, you have term over the g squared if you iterate. So iterating is a bit tedious, but you can do it, or you can do it by a machine. So you get the Feynman diagrammatic at first order in the coupling constant for the four-point function. And you get here the interaction term. You see. So, in this simple example, you see that from this exact Schwinger-Dyson equation, which is an equation for all correlation function of the 5-4 series with an arbitrary number of points, by solving it iteratively in powers of G, you generate the Feynman, well, the diagram, Feynman diagrammatic and the perturbative expansion of correlation function in terms of Feynman diagrams. So that's, of course, completely equivalent. But it comes from an exact relation between the correlation function. So the Schwinger Dyson equation for some quantum field theory can be solved by iteratively in the coupling. Then you get the standard Feynman diagrammatics. But since it's an exact, one can also try to solve them either numerically or making some approximation. You can truncate them. But by using some physical argument, forgetting part of the Feynman diagram, but keeping still a large class of Feynman diagrams. And this leads to interesting developments that I'm not going to treat them. But the Schwinger-Dyson equation can be treated by truncation method to study non-perturbatively some quantum physics theory. Okay. Let me just finish by one remark. I presented this idea of a Schwinger-Dyson equation, which is a quantum version of the equation of motion for relativistic quantum field theory. But for non-relativistic system with a large number of degrees of freedom, in particular in condensed matter or in quantum physics, there exists also non-relativistic version of the Schwinger-Dyson equation because I've just used the fact that there is an action, of course, and if the model is non-relativistic, there is an action which is non-relativistic. So the Schwinger-Dyson equation takes a different form. So instead of having the Laplace operator, which is a Lorentz invariant, you get some operator involving the derivative with respect to the time and the derivative with respect to the time, which are different, for instance, the Schrödinger operator for a particle. And those Schwinger-Dyson equations are an important tool in condensed matter physics and quantum physics. Okay, so now I have 5 minutes left, so I don't have time. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow Monday or later on. I showed you what is the quantum analog of the equation of motion. I have not showed you whether there is a quantum analog of the action itself. And there is one, but I have no time to discuss that. So I'm going to present something that I think can be done in 5 minutes. Well, when I state that, this means usually that it takes me 10 minutes, but I try. I think that something you have seen in quantum theory or in quantum QFT1, but since it's important, I will redo it, which is at that stage, it's just going to be counting powers of H-bar and counting diagrams. So the perturbative expansion in for instance phi 4 in a quantum field theory is related very simply to the semi-classical expansion in powers of h bar in the calculation, and it's also called very often in the loop expansion. Well, what are those loops? Let me just consider just an example. I go back to phi 4 theory. I hope now you are familiar with at least one loop perturbative expansion of phi 4 because you have studied it in QFT. I've derived it here for the 2 and 4 point function. And let's consider, in my case, the connected diagrams. The connected diagrams are not generated by Z but by something which is called W of G, which is h bar log of z of g, but the rules are the same. And in the action, in the functional integral, the source term, you have d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s sub phi, and you have exponential plus 1 over h bar j times phi. Okay. So let's consider the connected diagrams. For instance, in the two-point function, the two-point function is given at first order by those two diagrams. This diagram has no g, and this diagram has a factor, a coupling constant, there is a g. But in fact, there is a g over h bar. Well, those terms, external legs, are associated to functional derivative with respect to j. So this term has a, here I have a j over h bar attached to each external over h bar, and a j over h bar. And if I'm considering the connected diagrams, I forget about the fact that, for instance, you have a diagram with two external legs. So for instance, that's for 2 points. For 4 points, the only connected diagrams is this one, because the other one I draw are disconnected. So again, I have a g over h bar here and a g over h bar here. And here I have a g over h bar. And remember that those are the diagrammatics, and remember that the propagator is h bar over p squared plus m squared in momentum space. So, and finally, since I have an h bar in front of the log, let me, by definition, associate an h bar to each connected component. So, now, what is the contribution of this diagram? You see, this diagram. Well, there is no j. There is 1 over h bar squared coming from the external legs. There is an h bar coming from the propagator. And there is an h bar coming from the fact that I had an h-bar by choice to the connected component. So, this has a factor h0. It's 1. Okay, now let me consider this one. Okay, again, it has 1 over h-bar squared because it has two external legs. There is a factor h bar because I have a connected component. Now I have three propagators. And I have one vertex. So I get a factor h bar times g, if you want. There is a g and there is an h bar. Now, let me consider this diagram. I have 2 minutes. Okay, well, I'll let you do the calculation. There is a factor g. There are some factor h bar, ta 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 ta. So I have a factor g times h bar 0. Now, I have not derived it, but I think you have seen this diagram in QFT1. The first connected non-trivial mu has a factor g squared. because there are two vertices. And you have a h bar to the power minus 4, from h bar to the power 6, and h bar, because there is a one connected component. So at the end, you get h bar 1, etc. Okay, so with these rules, I associate one over h bar to each eternal legs, an h bar to each propagator, and a g over h bar for each diagram. You get the simple result that for a connected diagrams, a diagram here connected gives a factor h bar with some power, let me call it b. B is 4, where b is the number of internal loops of the diagram. You see, this diagram has no loops. This diagram has one loop. This diagram has one loop. Therefore, it has an h bar. And if you want to go a bit further, this is a two-loop diagram for a two-point function. And it has indeed a factor of h bar square, if you see. Okay? So a diagram has a factor h bar to the number of loops or connected diagram. And it has a factor g, which is v, where v is a number of vertices. That's for the 5-4. Okay. And the fact is that there is a reason, there is a topological reason for this relation. Very simple topological reason. That's a relation which is an important relation of topology, but which goes back to Leonhard Euler, who was basically the inventor of topology, but because he started to count some simple problem. It was a problem of bridges in a city, and he was asked whether he could cross all the bridges without going back to the same place, and that's so relation. Yes, reason. Leonhard Euler, which states that for a general graph, so a graph is just a set of vertices, for instance, here is one, which has four vertices and some number of lines. A general graph may have v vertices, l lines, the lines for a Feynman graph correspond to the propagator, and it has, I'm considering a connected graph. Otherwise, the formula gets a bit different. And the formula is that the number of loops of the graph, and the number of loops has a well-defined mathematical sense. Of course, you can count them, but for instance, for a graph like that, which is a tetrahedron, you may ask, it's a bit more difficult to count how many loops it has. In fact, it has three loops, independent loops. But the number of loops defined by something called the Betti numbers in topology is given by the number of lines minus v plus 1, and 1 is the number of connected components. And that's true for any graph. It doesn't need to be represented in a blackboard. It can live in a very large space of dimension. Anyway, so b I call it B for two reasons in my lectures. First, because loops means boucle in French, like buckles. Okay, and second, because it's also a Betti number. Okay, and you see that here I have an h bar. The relation is because I have a factor one over h bar per propagator, and I have a factor h bar. I have a factor h bar per line here. To a line, I have an h bar factor, and to any vertices, either internal or the end. My rule, I associate a 1 over h bar. And I have a h bar 1 by my normalization for connected components. So, in fact, this kind of counting amounts to this famous topological relation. And so, in fact, and you see also that, for instance, for this diagram, it has one vertex, so it's h bar 0, while this one has two vertices, it had an h bar 1. So this is a relation you have in phi 4 theory, the same power up to some, maybe some constant, between the number of vertices, because it's a perturbative expansion in G, therefore you have a G to the number of vertices, the factor of h bar, so which measures the quantumness of the contribution of the graph, and the topology of the diagram. And that's why perturbative expansion in the Kublik constant amounts to a semi-classical expansion in powers of h bar and amounts to a topological expansion in the topology of the Feynman diagrams, which contributes to the different order, either in the Kublik constant or in power of h bar. And of course, I spent more than 10 minutes, so I apologize for. But you'll see this in many contexts later on. Okay, thank you.